The question related to state tax revenues, and if I can paraphrase, I think I got it, how much increased tax revenue might come out of the picture that I painted as to how the economy will play out. Just by chance, I was this morning at the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce where Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle spoke on this subject. So what I can do is, rather than give you my opinion, I'll actually give you his opinion as he presented it this morning. And that is that 2009 and then the 2011 fiscal year are both assuming very challenging revenue years that are not assuming any substantial growth in revenues, and therefore what they're dealing with under the Gold Dome is the question of where they cut. So I did ask him in that meeting this morning what his underlying economic assumptions were, not his, but what the Purdue administration's underlying economic assumptions are for these next 2 years, and they are pretty much in line with the, let's say, the more modest or more moderate growth picture that I painted. Georgia is slightly worse than the national averages by many indicators, but should pretty much track the national experience. So if we have a slow recovery, then I think that's what you should expect in the state of Georgia as well. The question relates to bank closures, bank failures in the state of Georgia, and I'm sure you're all aware of some of the national press coverage that sort of makes Georgia, and particularly North Georgia, the center of some of these bank failures. And the question is, how does that really affect our overall economy? Well, first let me talk a little bit about what's caused these failures. The snow belt to sun belt migration that particularly built the population base of Atlanta. When I lived in Georgia in the 80s, Atlanta was a little over 2 million people. Now it's 5.3 million people. So it sort of doubled over a 20-year period. That migration obviously required housing, and there were a number of mini bank formations during this period, and unfortunately many of those banks got concentrated in residential and commercial real estate, far too concentrated. I spoke to a banker earlier this evening who talked about their management of concentrations. For you bankers in the audience, it's just essential that you don't get overly concentrated in one sector. You could also combine that with the deposit or liability management of the banks not growing as expected, and therefore becoming dependent on brokered deposits and other forms of hot money that would leave quickly if there were trouble. Those two problems, concentration in real estate and a weaker liability structure, have created some very fragile banks, and we've seen a number of closures. And I suspect we'll see some more. The effect of those closures or those failures on the broad economy of Georgia should not be excessive. It shouldn't be very great. It affects, obviously, the communities in which those banks operate, and many of them are single community or very small footprint kinds of banks, and it affects the borrowers, the businesses and so forth that they have lent to or would like to borrow from them. But an overall statement, I don't think the small, relatively small community bank closures that we've seen or will see will have a significant impact on the state economy overall. Well, first let me say that I and my colleagues observe a pretty strict separation between monetary policy and fiscal policy. And we leave fiscal policy to the Treasury Department and administration, and we're responsible for monetary policy. So this is not a subject that I want to get deeply into, But let me just state the obvious, which I'm sure everybody in the room already sees. We've got a serious deficit problem. The arrows are going in the wrong direction right now. The administration has proposed some measures to try to reduce the deficit over the medium term. We have a growing national debt, and those arrows are headed in the right direction, or excuse me, in the wrong direction. And like all citizens, I believe we have to turn that ship in a different direction. It's going to take some time. I don't think it creates a crisis, a currency crisis with the dollar or anything like that in the near term. But it will be even more serious when my generation starts to collect Social Security and Medicare, which is not very many, unfortunately for me, not very many years away. In fact, to younger audience, I've often said, I am the personification of your worst nightmare because starting in 2012, I'm eligible. And I'm part of the problem. So part of the problem, unwittingly part of the problem, but nonetheless part of the problem. It's those entitlement costs that are coming down the road starting in the next decade and then running for many, many years that are the most worrisome aspect of this problem. And, you know, I believe we just have to deal with this. And currently it's difficult to get the political consensus to deal with it. So let me stop there. That's more than I should have said. Maybe one more question, if there is one more. The question was first pointing out that Chairman Bernanke, who was a professor at Princeton University, is an expert on the Great Depression. A lot of his economics studies related to the Great Depression. And the question is, what did he do differently in this crisis than what was done in the Great Depression? Does that do justice to your question?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of technical matters, and some of the, and I'm not an expert on the history of the Great Depression, but there were some serious monetary policy mistakes during that period that really involved tightening and making more expensive borrowing at the very time when you would want to make borrowing cheaper and money more available to try to overcome the weakness in the economy. And I can say, as someone who participated but also was a close observer, that Chairman Bernanke and other people, Secretary Geithner and then Secretary Paulson, who dealt sort of in the foxholes, dealt with this problem, did not repeat some of those mistakes. They attacked the financial crisis and as a result also attacked the recession with a lot of strong firepower. Prior to September of 2008, had a balance sheet of the central bank, of the Fed, of $800 billion, round numbers. And because of the financial crisis, as a necessity to deal with it, we grew that balance sheet to $2.3 trillion, which is about where it is today. That's a massive amount of creation of liquidity that was put to work to try to stabilize specific markets, to put to work in the purchase of mortgage-backed securities to try to stabilize and improve the housing sector and make mortgages affordable, all put to work to try to first stabilize the financial system and the economy, and then begin growth. As I said in my earlier remarks, we're now at a juncture where that has pretty much worked, at least compared to how bad it could have been. You know, economists, I'm not a professional economist, but economists will say, well, you can't prove a counterfactual. In other words, what would have happened if you hadn't done something? But I believe, that had we not taken very strong action it would have been far worse. We would have been in a far worse situation today. They took that strong action, and as I said in my earlier remarks, now we're at the juncture to start thinking about how to unwind those policies. Some are already happening. I would call that normalization. And then sometime in the future, depending on which economic narrative plays out, we'll begin the process of raising interest rates and doing some other things that, in effect, get us back to the broad normal that existed prior to the crisis. Chairman Bernanke's leadership through this has been just extraordinary. And those of us in the system applauded the decision of the Senate to reappoint him, to confirm him, and we were much relieved when that happened. With those remarks, thank you very much, and it's been great to be here in Augusta. Thank you.